Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, intern Hanley here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our good friend Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel. Adam, what's going on? How we doing? We're great. Appreciate good. You taking time to join us this morning. So, Adam, another scrimmage yesterday from the Vols. Josh Heupel spoke afterward. What's your sense of the Vols, especially offensively, how they're coming along, particularly with the receivers so far during camp? What's your sense on how Josh Heupel feels about that group?
If you look at the video, the body language, I think, said even more than the words he said. And even the words he said were, not there yet, something like that. Because there's a little bit of an anxiety, I think, of what they're going to do there. I mean, if you think about their offense, this is an offense that scored almost 40 points a game last year, could score with just about anybody. Running back has some issues, but generally they're fine there to start the year. Jabari Small's good. They have some other back behind them. Four or five starters returning the offensive line. You've got a really good quarterback in Hendon Hooker back. Your two tight ends are back. Your 1,000-yard wide receiver's back with Cedric Tillman. You really have two spots to get a figure out at wide receiver, and you feel like this engine can sort of just go like it did last year. But they don't quite know what that combination is. I mean, Brew McCoy's eligibility, the USC transfer, Brew McCoy's eligibility is a big question mark, because if he's eligible, if he's ruled eligible today, then you say, hey, you get Brew McCoy, you get Jalen Hyatt, who they feel pretty good about at slot, and you got Cedric Tillman, and then you're just sort of figuring out who fills out the group at number four, number five, number six, whatever they want to do. But with Brew McCoy not eligible right now, you know, Walker Merrill, guy from Brentwood there, is a possibility. Really good hands. Not super dynamic with after the catch, but really good hands. Ramel Keaton is sort of a known quantity. He's serviceable, but he's dropped a lot of passes in camps. I don't think they feel great about him. Jimmy Holiday was a name that was floated for the first time. I think I've heard this camp yesterday. So you can tell they're sort of reaching there. He's super fast, but he's more of a kick returner. Special teams guy, has not played a ton of wide receivers, was a high school quarterback. They pressed Jimmy Callaway a little bit, who's a really good playmaker, but more of the slot. He's inconsistent. They've criticized him. Now they're not criticizing him as much because they think maybe he can fit into that. So you can tell there's a little bit of concern there trying to figure out that unit, and everything is just put on pause until they know Brew McCoy's eligibility.
Yeah, and so Heupel, he's talking about a couple guys yesterday, missed a day or two, and then later, you know, you some guys got to prove they can do the totality, all that stuff, and he said that's a Jimmy Callaway, it's Squirrel White, in particular those two guys. So one thing, so those two guys have been a little bit banged up, right, which is not ideal, because I think both those guys might actually factor in.
They could. Now, here's the thing is Jimmy Callaway can play on the outside or in the slot. He would be somebody you could maybe put on the outside if those other guys I named didn't work out. With Squirrel, yes, he's been baited. Well, both of them have. But as a freshman, Squirrel White sort of fits that M.O. of the – sort of the camp star, maybe, you know, that freshman that flashes, and he's got one really good thing about him, which is speed, and you say, this guy's going to set the world on fire this year, and then once you get into the season, that sort of fades, and maybe he shows up later in the year. I'm not saying that's going to happen with him, but that is sort of what you get a lot of these times with these freshmen that flash in the first 2 weeks of camp. Not to mention, I mean, here's the thing we have to remember with wide receiver Josh Heupel's offense. Historically, he's had three guys. I mean, that up-tempo offense, they don't sub much. They have three guys that produce, and there's a steep drop-off to the fourth guy. That was the case at Missouri. It's the case at UCF. It was the case last year. So if you're not in the top three, you may get left out. They know who their one is. They feel like they probably know who their two is, Hyatt, but they don't know who their three is. And if your three, four, five, and six are all about the same, that really doesn't work well with what they do.
Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Adam, you know, we've talked to you about the defensive side of the ball. I'm specifically interested in corner. What do you think of what they have there? And if you had to choose today, who do you think is starting at corner for Tennessee right now?
Warren Burrell, Christian Charles. I mean, Burrell is fine. He started last year. You know, he's not a guy that's going to make a lot of money in the NFL a year from now. He's a solid corner. Christian Charles is a guy that they sort of moved there out of necessity in the spring because all their corners were hurt. And they looked at him and said, hey, you know, he could maybe play the position. Christian Charles fits very much of what they sort of promote, especially in recruiting, as their approach of we don't sign corners or safeties or nickels. We just sign defensive backs. We just like guys that can play everywhere. I've said this before, and people cringe a little bit when I say it, but Georgia and Alabama usually don't say we just sign defensive backs and they just fit anywhere. You sign lockdown corners, you sign rangy safeties, and your leftovers play nickel. And I think Tennessee's done well in that, the guys that they get are sort of that second-tier group behind what Georgia and Alabama typically get, and they use their versatility, and they can adjust well, and it helps them in terms of moving guys to different positions. But it does speak to the fact that they don't have lockdown corners. They just don't. And Charles and Burrell, I think, will be fine to start the year. Kamal Haddon is probably better than either of those guys. He's been injured. They feel like he'll be out there for practice, though, this week. And if he is, that helps because there's probably enough time for him to get in the starting lineup if he can catch up.
So Deshaun Rucker's name was mentioned, which I thought was interesting, mentioned by Heupel yesterday. I hadn't heard a lot about him, and I know, you know, he's had an injury. And Andre Turrentine, what am I missing with him? Why is he not in the discussion right now?
I think it's just going to take a while for him. I think he was sort of – Turrentine was sort of lumped in with Wesley Walker. These are two guys that used to be high school teammates at Ensworth. You think of them as comparable. One's from Georgia Tech. The other's from Ohio State. But Wesley Walker's played a lot of football, and he was a pretty well starter for 2 years at Georgia Tech. Turrentine played very little at Ohio State. He's just younger. So at the end of the year, I think we could be talking about Turrentine. Certainly next year, he's just not in the mix as much now. And, you know, he's probably going to be a safety, and they have their two starting safeties back. So there's not as much of a spot there. Wesley Walker sort of fits more into the star position, may play some at safety also. They've got pieces that they can move around, which I like. I don't think they quite know where they're going to be yet. Deshaun Rucker was mentioned by Heupel. You didn't hear him as much by position coaches or Tim Banks, the defensive coordinator. I think that's a little bit of the offensive head coach sort of just naming names of guys that he saw in a scrimmage that had ended 15 minutes earlier. Maybe there's more to it than that, but even Josh Heupel said, he said, well, I got to look at the film. In other words, I didn't watch the corners very much. I watched my offense, and I think that was my takeaway from that comment.
Adam, what does the addition of Lynjay Dixon do to the running back room, do you think, and where exactly do you think he fits in?
Not a lot of places right now. I mean, it gives them another body. I'll be curious to see how long they wait on him. I mean, you could tell he was a little out of place when he got here. I mean, he played four seasons at Clemson. He can run the ball. He knows how to do that. He's a change of pace back when he ever gets out there. You have to know this offense. You have to be adjusted to the tempo. And it shocks a lot of people when they get into it. It's one thing to see it. It's another thing to get out there and do it. And everybody else now, after being in it a year, is all running at 100 miles an hour, and you're not. Last year, at least, everybody was sort of, you know, going at the same speed and speeding up as you go. That whole offense goes fast, and if you're not ready for it, you're going to be left behind. And the freshmen were already ready for it. Dylan Sampson was here in the summer. Justin Williams-Thomas was an early enrollee, so he went through spring. So you can just see the sort of the contrast between them. He could later in the year, though. But it, also that's going to be dictated by the health of the running backs and how those freshmen do. Because if Justin Williams-Thomas or Dylan Sampson look good, Lynn J. Dixon's not really going to get a shot. It would take some injuries. We saw last year that could happen. But it's more of what they can do, not what he can add.
So is it good or bad that left tackle per Heupel may go into the season?
I mean, it's not great. I appreciate that he's honest in saying that they're both going to play because they're not super confident in either. I mean, game day is the easiest way to see who wins a position if you don't really know in camp. And Gerald Mincy looks the part a little more so. But who cares who looks the part? You know, Jeremiah Crawford played some last year, didn't play great, but they said that's because he was injured. He got in there late. He's a junior college transfer. He just was not a guy that had a lot of time to get into it. So they'll see a game day. I mean, the Ball State game, they'll both play a lot. Whoever grades out the best will get the majority of snaps against Pittsburgh. So the Ball State game is essentially the preseason for whoever that left tackle is. But I do appreciate it because they could easily just name a guy and say, this is the guy, and them not really know and have to swap up when they get to the season. They're sort of admitting right now they just don't know.
Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Adam, great stuff as always. Thanks for taking time to join us this morning.
All right, guys. Y'all have a good one.
You as well. Adam Sparks, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll continue the conversation on the Vols. Got some Vandy takeaways from Joe Rexer to get to as well coming up.
Scrimmage action.
Yeah, buddy. All of that ahead. This is Robbie and Rexer, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Rolling down a backwoods Tennessee byway.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Adam Sparks for joining us in the last segment. JC in Goodlettsville on the text line says, welcome back, Robbie. Since Joe Milton is projected as the starter at QB in 2023, any early Heisman hype out there?
Let it be stated for the record, we did not ask Adam Sparks. I have not brought up Joe Milton. You brought up Joe Milton. But if you're going to bring up Joe Milton, let's have a quote from Josh Heupel.
He did talk about him yesterday.
Through practice, he's been a better decision maker. Better command of what we're doing offensively. Strides you would hope and think he needs to take and is capable of. He's taking better care of the football. A lot of things we've asked of him, just growing up and becoming a mature person and player that we need inside that room and in that position inside this program. He's taking some of those strides. There's a bunch left out there for him. You guys know he has the arm talent to make some really special throws. But I think all in all, in the two scrimmages, he's had really good command and presence in what we've done. End quote. So he's Heisman odds for next year. Yeah, let's put him at 8-1.
Minus 150. Just go ahead and make him the runaway favorite for next year. It is interesting. I agree with Adam, and that's kind of why I led off that way with Adam in the last segment. I thought Heupel's answer on the receiving corps was pretty interesting yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like, obviously, they feel good about Tillman. I think they feel pretty good about Hyatt. And after that, I don't know that they feel all that great.
Yeah, because like a guy like Chaz Nimrod, for example, I think they really are excited about him down the road. But this happens all the time. And, you know, in the NFL, you know, rookies in the NFL often make a difference. Sometimes they don't. But, you know, like a lot of times you see a rookie after a few weeks, if they're up, you know, if they're good enough, to be in the NFL, you know, they make a difference. But they've also gone through college football. And freshmen in college football are so often overestimated, right? Like Squirrel White, love his name, his speed. I thought he looked great out there in individuals on the first day of camp. But there's so much more to it. And if you're a little banged up and you're slight and you need a year in the weight room, et cetera, all of a sudden you go down that depth chart. And yeah, with Brew McCoy, and that's the hard part is I think if they felt like they had him, they'd probably be, you know, McCoy, Hyatt, Tillman, and you're going to roll with those three. And then we'll see if other people can get in there. But it's a great point by Sparks that typically it's kind of surprising when you think about this offense, you're like, you go so fast, you run so many plays. Of course you got to rotate receivers in, right? But the thing is, you also have to execute at such a high level. They basically pick their guys, and then that's who they throw to.
Second half of last year, I mean, it was three guys playing wide receiver pretty much.
It was Jones, Peyton, and Tillman.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much getting all the reps. So the McCoy thing's really interesting. That's a big deal. And I still think, to some extent, like you'll see a little score white. I think Jimmy Callaway might be – part of the answer. And look, Walker Merrill, a lot of people talking about Walker Merrill. I think a guy who could get out there and give him a little bit of help. But Brew McCoy looks like a guy who could really be, you know, a plus player.
Dave in Big Rock on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, let's all agree that when Chaz Nimrod's football career is over, he immediately gets a spot on Robbie and Rex Road. I think we could do that.
I mean,
great name, all-name team. They got a couple guys on the all-name team.
Yeah,
Tennessee.
I mean,
Nimrod.
Nimrod and Squirrel.
Squirrel White.
What if you had Squirrel Nimrod? Like, that mind blown. Like
that name? That'd be iconic.
Every NIL deal possible is his. Like, Fulkerson has to give up his NIL stuff to Squirrel Nimrod if he existed.
I'm pulling heavily for Chaz Nimrod. Really am.
Yeah.
It's a great football name.
It's a great name. It's a great name, period. And I'm telling you, Chaz Nimrod, next year, I think Joe Milton's going to be finding him streaking down the sideline a few times, but you know, I'm just projecting ahead a little bit.
That's right. Joe, you were at a Vanderbilt scrimmage over the weekend. What were some things that stood out to you about the Commodores, other than, as multiple people on Twitter pointed out, they were not scrimmaging on their own field?
They were not. They were scrimmaging at Ensworth, which may the first time I've been to Ensworth. Damn.
Very nice.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I've been to, I think, most of the private schools around here. Other than that one, whew, that place is pretty sweet. And, of course, Vanderbilt, they're doing they're resurfacing the field, which they need, which is good. And then they're also doing an end zone stuff for some of their renovations and improvements and premium seating and all that stuff. So, yes, they were over there for the scrimmage. The first takeaway I have is that, wow, did they hit hard. Like, tackling to the ground, full-on tackle football. And so after daily being out with Titans, where that just doesn't happen, I'm like, man, this is tackle football. This is a game. And then my next thing would be, I thought it was a good day for all three quarterbacks. So you can always look at that and say, so, tough day for the defense. You had some moments. B.J. Anderson, I really like him. At corner, I think he's going to help. You know, I think he's going to be a good player this year for them. There were some defensive moments, but Skinner, McGowan, these receivers, I like a lot. And again, all the quarterbacks, Mike Wright. I think he's going to start that opener. By the way, the tackling, kind of makes sense. I mean, they play a football game a week from Saturday.
Yeah,
so they've got to get ready. I thought Mike Wright had a lot of good moments, and obviously he's a huge play waiting to happen. He had a couple throws you want back, and you can't have those throws you want back in games. I thought Ken Seals was really good. Ken Seals, probably the best of the three, I would say, just in terms of throwing the ball. But A.J. Swan, the freshman, got to keep the brakes, got to keep the foot close to the brakes here. Watch him in one scrimmage. I know in the spring a lot of people were excited about him. I really like what he could be someday as a quarterback. I think there's a lot there. And that's some real escapability. I don't know that he's going to be a dual threat necessarily, but really like his feet in the pocket and his the ball's out and it's accurate with some zip on it. So good day for them. I just look at Vanderbilt and they're very banged up front defensively. And that's not where you want to be. You know, nope. I don't know when Davion Davis is going to be back, but he's kind of, you know, a little bit of a heart and soul guy there. And so having him out is not great. And they're going to have to figure things out, you know, defensively with their front when they're going up against good football teams. You know, their defense, I just don't know. They've got some of the young guys in there. Darren Agu, you know, the big-time recruit, former Notre Dame commit. How much is he going to matter this year? Yeah, I don't know. Again, freshman. Big-time recruit, big-time prospect, talent is going to be a difference maker at Vanderbilt, but will he right away? Probably asking a lot.
Do you still think that there's a chance you could see both Seals and Wright this year? And not from an injury standpoint or anything like that, but that being part of the plan, that you could see – right, and then Seals takes over at some point in the game and they go back to two quarterbacks, or do you think it's going to be the Mike Wright show until proven otherwise this year?
I think it only happens if – I don't think there's going to be rotating.
I guess the better way to phrase that question, is there anything Ken Seals can do in the next couple of weeks to get him on the field?
I don't think so. I think Mike Wright's going to start at quarterback at Hawaii. However – at some point, if Mike Wright isn't efficient and isn't moving the offense, isn't winning games that they could potentially win, or at least giving him a chance in some games, I think certainly you could see him. But I really will be surprised if Vanderbilt – now, look, in fact, we were talking about this. You know, Mitch Light went with me over there to the scrimmage the other day, talking about that possibility. And to me, it's like – I just don't see, like, three bad series and then here comes Ken Seals. I don't see that. Now, let's say you're in the fourth quarter and they're down 10 and it's just been a bad day for Mike Wright. Well, you've got a guy who's started for you who can play quarterback. Okay. And at some point, like, especially in these few Saturdays where they can actually win games this year, you got to do whatever you can do to win. But I think Mike Wright's going to get the full the full look as a starter who knows he's the starter, who gets a whole game and a whole game plan, and the offense built around his skills, and I think that's the right thing to do. I think you have to give that the full look.
I think so, too. It's just it's interesting to have – and we talked about this with Tennessee, and, you know, kind of joking around about the Joe Milton thing. You know, Vanderbilt's got some quarterback depth, too, right in their backyard of Ken Seals has played. So,
yeah,
we got – you know, there's two programs – in the SEC that we focus in on the most because of the local ties here. And both of them have been able to do something to different degrees that's very hard to do in college football nowadays with a quarterback room.
Yeah, have former starters stay to be backups. You do not see that much. And I know that in Knoxville, we see Joe Milton because of an injury.
Right.
Or I guess Hendon Hooker just totally falls off the table performance-wise. Here, it is different here. I mean, it's... you know, at some point, there could be a switch. I think Mike Wright's come a long way. I'm really, really interested to see what he does in a game and in a full game. And it's a good opportunity for them. Hawaii's not great. It's on the road. It's not easy. I think they're almost going to have a week out there before the game to be acclimated. They're putting everything into winning this game. And if he wins it, you know, makes winning plays, then I think you may have something, and that's where he locks up, I think, this job even more if he can play well. But I'm confident he's getting that game.
Speaking of quarterbacks, we'll get back into the Titans' backup quarterback situation coming up next. Some interesting comments yesterday from offensive coordinator Todd Downing. We'll get to that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, intern Hanley here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. I got a four-pack of tickets to give away to the PBR Stampede Days coming up at Bridgestone Arena this Friday. Be caller number 3, 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win a four-pack of tickets to the PBR Stampede Days at Bridgestone Arena coming up this Friday. 615-737-1025. Some interesting comments from Todd Downing, Titans offensive coordinator yesterday, on Malik Willis and the backup quarterback situation. Here's what Todd Downing had to say yesterday at media availability.
You got to see Malik in live game action. What's your take as far as like how he was able to process things, the operation, and pretty much everything else?
Yeah, you know, I think there was some good and some room for improvement. I thought he showed timing and accuracy in some throws, and then there are a couple where I'm sure he wish he had it back, you know, and pulled the trigger on a couple things. But overall, there was growth. He did a nice job running the line of scrimmage and huddle procedure and protection checks and things like that. So a lot of good. And then, you know, obviously, you know, some stuff that we got to fine tune.
So that was Todd Downing yesterday at Titans media availability talking about Malik Willis. As you said, Joe, a lot of conversation about the backup quarterback position last Friday in the immediate aftermath of the Ravens game.
Very easy show to do.
I'm sure that it was. So what do you make of where both of these guys are in Logan Woodside and Malik Willis? Because there was a comment yesterday that Downing had that I thought kind of illustrated where this battle stands at the moment. And he was asked basically about, you know, the backup quarterback battle and said, basically, it's about coming in and being able to run the offense on a moment's notice. And that, to me, you know, we've talked about the studying that Logan Woodside does and how much Vrabel values that. I know Logan Woodside didn't play particularly well last week, but that kind of told me that that's what they value the most, and they feel pretty good about Woodside being able to do that. What do you make of this quote-unquote competition between Woodside and Willis and where it stands as of today?
I believe there's still a pretty sizable gap. I know some people don't want to hear that, but I believe there's still a pretty sizable gap when it comes to who's going to be the number two quarterback this year. I think Woodside still has a pretty good lead on Willis. And look, this is where, remember going into the preseason game, I was like, you know, our value reduces some. Now that people get to see preseason games, you get to see some of these guys play. You know, we're the eyes and ears at camp, and then you get games, and then everybody can see what it is. But yeah, here's an example of, like, don't overreact to a few snaps in one preseason game relative to daily out there. There's a difference. There's a gap. There should be. It's not a surprise. So, I said it Friday. I've opened my mind to the possibility that in the next 4 weeks, if Malik Willis just takes leaps and Logan Woodside is bad, which, by the way, you can't give the ball to the other team. He made some bad throws in that game.
Now, that's the number one job of the backup quarterback, is take care of the football.
Yeah. So if they go in different directions and Willis is just better than him, fine. Then I think it's something to talk about. I think a lot of people are taking the leap right now that, like, it should be Willis, and that's a mistake. It's not true. And look, Willis's performance Thursday, again, I thought it was encouraging because he made some plays and you could see the ability. You can see where he could be as a player. You can easily go ahead and pick through that film. And we talked about Trevor Maddich on Dylan Radin's being launched into the sun by, you know, I mean, you could easily go ahead and find the analysis that Malik Willis is miles, light years away from being an NFL quarterback based on some of the throws he didn't make or throws he missed. I mean, it's however you want to look at it. Encouraging night overall. I'm opening my mind to that a little bit. It's going to take a lot for him to actually leapfrog Logan Woodside, and I know the text line is about to react to that, and I'm sorry. What it is, man.
I'll say this. From what I saw of Willis last Thursday, there are moments, there are throws, and certainly the touchdown run, I mean, that stands out, obviously. But there are moments in the game where he does some things, and you look around and you say, well, all right, well, Logan Woodside can't do that. Like, not even close. Like, he's, the talent-wise, I don't think is particularly close.
Agreed.
When it comes to Woodside and Willis. But that's not – I think people – that's not all that it's about right now. It's about, can you run the playbook? Can you be decisive with the ball? Like, do you know the offense? Do you know where to go with the football? Do you know the reads? Like, there's so many different things that you have to go through. And I think it's good that Willis was able to make some of those plays. But to your point, there's the freeze frame that's been out there all weekend of Treylon Burks just streaking down the field wide open, and Malik Willis never saw him, didn't throw the ball. I mean, there's a lot of things decision-wise in terms of getting rid of the football and being decisive of where to go with it that I think he still has to work on. I mean, Vrabel talked about, you know, him taking him out of the game because he wanted to let it rip and he didn't do it. Like, those are things that you have to work on. So talent-wise, like, I don't think it's particularly close. I mean, the sidearm throw that Malik Willis made the other day, like, Logan Woodside's probably not doing that.
That was nice.
It was pretty nice. So yeah. I think there's a lot to be encouraged about from Malik Willis, but those two things I think you have to separate. Like, that's part of it, but it's not all of it when it comes to the backup quarterback discussion.
At some point, I feel confident in saying that at some point Malik Willis would clearly be a better option as a number two quarterback than Logan Woodside. Logan Woodside's ceiling is as a backup quarterback in the NFL. And it's a great story that he's entrenched himself as a backup quarterback in the NFL. I mean, good for him. But that's his ceiling. Malik Willis's ceiling is being a good NFL starting quarterback. No idea if he'll get there, get close to it, approach it. I don't know. But that's what it is.
Yep.
I mean, he just has a lot more. And it's just very early in the process. And probably don't talk about it enough, but, you know, the Liberty offense, not that the Liberty offense is on an island in college football, but it is one of those. Look to the sideline. Here's what the coverage is. Here's what the play is. Run that play. Every play.
Yeah.
You know, never huddle. And in the NFL, you huddle and you got to – I mean, there's a whole part of the job that's running the huddle as a quarterback too, by the way. It's just it's a huge difference than, say, coming from – like, I'm trying to think of, like, what are the best, like, pro-style offenses in college football right now? You know, that are – I mean, there's
– somewhat Georgia. Depends on
– yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah, Georgia's a good example.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a – it's just – it's a – you have a leg up if you're from one of those offenses. You know, Hugh Freeze's offense, that's definitely – it's something to overcome when you go to the NFL. It's just reality.
Yeah. Shane from Ashland City on the text line says, I feel like Willis's pocket awareness was phenomenal, but quarterback vision down the field, not great yet. Megan on the text line says, if Woodside's best quality is how he studies, then maybe he ought to be the backup in Arizona. He could be a great asset to Kyler Murray.
Mm. But we don't know how good he is at Call of Duty, so it could actually be detrimental.
Imagine how much advice Woodside can give Kyler Murray next week. Like, hey, man.
Yeah.
Look at this. This is how you study some film.
Yes. Oh, totally. Yeah. I think that would be very well received. But I agree with Shane, like, pocket awareness and pocket escapability. You know, there's speed and everything, but there's also the ability to quickly elude someone. And
yep.
Then whatever happens after that. And that's one thing I saw for sure is, boy, he is tough to corral, you know. And like you said, one of those plays, he extends the play and the only way you can get that ball to Hudson is with the little sidearm flip. Now, that stuff's great. I mean, there's a lot there. There's no doubt. It's just I like TD's. Turn. You know, slow cooking. It's just it has to be. They knew it was going to have to be, and it is. And it's possible that in a few weeks they'd be like, you know what? He's a better option. But right now, especially the way this team is built, as we've talked about a million times. A team that does have a good defense, that should still be in games even if it isn't doing a ton on offense, that has Derrick Henry, the safe game manager QB makes sense as your backup quarterback.
Dave on the text line says, what I saw was the Titans need to go get a Fitzmagic type. I don't think either of those guys can win a professional football game. It's coming from Dave on the text line.
Right, so the way Logan Woodside can win a professional football game is by handing off, making quick, simple throws, move the chains, not turning the ball over, and just being that veteran, being that Brian Hoyer.
Yeah.
Because this team is good enough defensively and the way it runs the ball. That's how he can win a professional football game. That's where I think he has the edge right now. They're on different tracks, but there's also a big difference in how and one's experience to the other.
Well, and if it's Willis, and Downing talked about this a little bit yesterday, like it's there are certain skill sets that he brings to the table where if it's a game week, they'd have to tailor the plan a little bit differently if it's Willis or if it's Woodside. So, you know, that's part of this too is, you know, you look at Willis right now, how quickly can he get to where the game plan in terms of what they're asking him to do doesn't have to change all that much because he's ready to be decisive and make those throws. Like, that's part of the growing process too.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure, like, it'd be different in a good way with him because you can utilize some of what he does. Yep. But you also don't want to do that a ton with any NFL quarterback unless your offense is completely built around that like the Ravens is.
615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it is time for the Rex Rant. Joe Rexroad's rant of the day. We'll get to that coming up on the other side. The NFL Week 1 odds are out, and now's the time to try FanDuel Sportsbook if you haven't already. Get in on the action early this season. Right now, new FanDuel Sportsbook customers can get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. So maybe you like Derrick Henry to win the rushing title this year. I think he's got the edge over Jonathan Taylor, but you take it any way you want to take it. Just sign up using promo code ROB, place your first bet, and FanDuel will give you up to $1,000 back in free bets if you don't win. There's no better place to get ready for the football season than on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook and official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app, sign up using promo code ROB to get started with your no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. Once again, that promo code is ROB. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only. Refund issued is non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 14 days.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 1025 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad here on Robbie and Rexroad. A little bit of singing coming back for Rexroad as well. Rexroad is coming off a great weekend.
I don't know which NCOT B member this is right now. Is this Joey? Is this Joey singing this part? I think it is.
You're coming off a great weekend at Nissan Stadium.
Well, you know, by the way, which is the song the Chili Peppers ended with, which was pretty freaking amazing. Yeah, that show was, that might be the best stage show that I've seen since Pink Floyd, and I like their setup. But also the Strokes were great, and Julian Casablancas said, congratulations on your future legend quarterback, Malik Willis, to the crowd. And then he said something like, you guys haven't had a cool quarterback in a while or something like that. That may have been altered a bit during his set. Still sounded good, but I thought that was interesting. He shout out to Malik Willis for
Cool quarterbacks. Tannehill's not cool.
Yeah, I guess
Marcus wasn't cool.
Fitzman. What about
Charlie Whitehurst?
Mettenberger. Come on, man. A lot of cool guys. But that was cool, and it was a great weekend. Thank you for mentioning it. It was pretty amazing. But I want to rant today about what a big baby Mark Stoops is, and because I think people are totally wrong about this. So I guess I'm gonna like rant in defending John Calipari. But I'm sorry. So you're excited? I want you to get mad that I'm ripping Mark Stoops.
No.
You have to be. You can't be totally happy. You have to be partially mad about your football coach because he's a baby. He's a baby.
It really doesn't.
So hold on now. Hold on. Calipari, he does what coaches do all the time. Like he's trying to get money for a facility, right? So he says a very obvious thing, right? I mean, is there anything wrong with what he said?
No.
It's a basketball school. So Mark Stoops, and then people are mad at him. I think people just have to be mad at him because they don't like him. Like they're just jump on Calipari. And Mark Stoops is like, you know, likable guy, and he's one of the Stoopses. And look what he's done with the program and all this stuff. What is he crying about? I mean, he goes on Twitter and like, oh, I thought we were in the SEC, and then he's doing all this. He takes two shots at Calipari, which again, I'm here for all of it. I'm not mad about any of it. I'm happy. We all love this. Okay. But he takes the shot of the four straight postseason wins, you know, because they lost to St. Peter's. I mean, like, that's what he meant, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he does the program born on third base, which is, I mean.
Yeah, twist that knife a little bit.
I didn't see that one.
So that was the, that was actually what he said, right?
Yeah.
He actually said that. He didn't tweet it. All right, I'm going to find it. Hold on. I'm going to find the exact quote. But yes, that was the one of all the things he said, like, I'm going to defend my players, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, here we go. It was him at the presser, says, quote, "This program wasn't born on third base. Some may, but I can promise you this football team didn't wake up on third base. I did a lot of work. We did a lot of work."
That's
end quote.
Right, yeah.
Dude.
Shots fired. Yeah.
But so I don't understand. And then Calipari comes back from the Bahamas and is like, yeah, you know, what do you say? Like, I'm Italian. I speak my mind or whatever. I said too much. I'm sorry. So he fell on the knife, apologized, and I just don't under. Calipari does not deserve any of this crap. And Mark Stoops, I look at Mark Stoops differently. I'm sorry. I think the Tennessee program is absolutely better than the Kentucky program.
You finally come around.
Whoa.
His program has dropped a couple notches in my eyes. I'm sorry, Mark Stoops. Weak.
Well, and then the AD, Mitch Barnhart, had to do a press conference too.
Yeah, which didn't seem to like help anything. And by the way, I mean, I'm looking at some shade from him, too.
Yes.
What did he say? He's like, you know, if you don't like it, you can leave, right? Yeah. Basically.
That would be going on stupid.
There? The Kentucky Athletic Department coming apart at the seams, baby.
So yeah. here's what's so the problem. So the football team is getting a new facility. They're in the works of building it, right? So they just gave like $25 million to them. Okay. Good. You guys have been successful. Okay, cool. Get a new practice facility. Now, Cal obviously wants one, wants to do this whole, like, museum in the base, whatever, you know, which I don't really think you need recruiting-wise now just because you have NIL and there's just so many different things. But whatever. Okay, you want one, too. You're Kentucky basketball. You should get one. I think Mark Stoops is, like, butthurt that, like, he's finally getting – and this is just speculation, but, like, he's finally getting something and, like, that team has never gotten respect and he's probably just, like – sick of it. But I didn't see all that third base, all that stuff, because like I said, I took a Twitter hiatus this weekend and I need to catch up. But I just saw the first.
I had to.
And then I saw all these Louisville people yesterday and I just couldn't get enough of it. But listen, I'll defend Calipari always. So
okay, so who are you picking? Have to pick one of them to continue as the coach of your program. Who are you picking?
There's some hesitation here.
Hmm.
I thought Calipari was God's gift to coaching.
I guess not, huh?
I actually don't know about that one.
I mean, look, someone could argue, which is like apparently what Mark Stoops thinks, someone could argue, well, you really have to screw it up to not win at Kentucky. You got everything you would ever need. It's an absolute blue blood.
I mean, is that an arguable point?
No. Now, granted, and I'm a huge fan of Tubby Smith as a human being, he's a good coach, but Tubby Smith went in there and didn't want to do some of the stuff that they normally do in the recruiting world, and it didn't work out great for him. And so, like, you can't – and let's not even mention what's-his-name from freaking Texas A&M. Like, what the heck did he do? Let's just have, like, a porno house and not go to work.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can screw it up. People have screwed it up.
Yeah, but I mean...
But there's a lot of, I think, good coaches that if you make a solid hire could go in there and probably win a lot.
Yeah, and then you look at Kentucky football and it's like they had two wins, what, six of them years ago? Consistently? And now... I don't know. I plead the fifth on this one. Plead the fifth.
It kind of sounds like Stoops is the coach that she's going with in there.
I think so.
My head is telling me Stoops, but my heart is telling me Cal.
Okay.
I'm torn.
Well, regardless, I think... Yeah, like if I had – well, what would you do, Robbie? Let's give you the same question.
Picking the coach?
You're Mitch Barnhart, and it's like one of these guys is leaving because of this. So who are you going to court to stay? You have to pick one to stay.
Stoops.
Yeah?
Yeah. You can find a basketball coach that can win at Kentucky.
You can.
You can certainly find a basketball coach that can get put out in the first round by St. Peter's.
Oh, there we go.
That shouldn't be too difficult.
Maybe Tennessee can find one to win a couple games in March.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about. See,
I do recall them winning more than Kentucky did in March this year.
Traditionally, no.
Whenever a Rex Rant can bring absolute chaos to the show, it's a beautiful thing. I think I probably...
Joe, who are you picking?
I think I would probably go Stoops.
You know my favorite part about this? My favorite part about this is Mitch Barnhart saying, quote, talking about the media, you look to create stories and it becomes the fact.
Dude, thank you.
Did the media do this?
Thank you for saying that. I don't know how the heck I failed to acknowledge that. What a bunch of crap. I mean, seriously.
Like, buddy, your coach is the one that said this. This has nothing to do with the media.
Yeah.
Also, Mitch, you did not even need a presser.
Yeah. I don't know what that was about. It solved nothing.
But, yeah, I mean, Kyle Tucker had full access to Kentucky and the Bahamas. Hopefully he got a couple pina coladas in there, too.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Cal wanted to say this. Cal's campaigning like coaches do. And, yeah, what he said, I guess, was a little too much. I still think Stoops was a huge baby on this. But, yeah, come on, Mitch. Yeah, the media is creating this. I love that. It's just the obvious. Just go to that. Just say that. There's enough people that are just going to be like, oh, yep, yeah, you got it.
That's
that,
right.
You know, you'll have enough people who just blindly agree with you without actually looking at the situation that you can get away with saying that. But how stupid.
And just listening to the quotes from the coaches.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, did you not see who started this? It was not the media.
But anyway,
it was John.
It is a beautiful thing. But I just feel like there was way too much anger at Cal on this when I'm like, this the gasoline was poured by Stoops. Little bit of a misspeak, and you got to defend it. I know he recruits against that, but you know what? If you're Kentucky football, you have to be embracing Kentucky basketball. Right? You have to embrace it and say, yeah, come here and you can go to the hoops games. Like, I mean, that's what the identity of the athletic department is. That so. I know you're fighting against that perception, but then again, embrace it.
Does this kind of signal some bad blood between Calipari and Stoops, especially from Stoops' point of view?
It has to, right?
Because on the surface, this seems like a pretty small thing to get that fired up about if you're Stoops. Like if they had a good relationship, even if you had a problem with it, you could go up to him and be like, hey man, what are you doing?
Text him.
Yeah. Like, what are you doing, man? Stop.
Yeah,
clearly
this is not a yeah.
I feel like it has been brewing for Mark Stoops, and he's traditionally like a guy who doesn't speak out. To be honest, I didn't even know he really had a Twitter. And then I feel like this one comment just unleashed, like Robbie said, a whole bunch of things that have maybe pissed him off in the past, and he let it rip.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Thank you.
Thanks,
Kentucky.
Mark.
So now they're gonna go undefeated this year. That's what that means. Kentucky football.
Mm-hmm.
Book it.
Mm-hmm. Must be. Yeah. Well, they better go undefeated, or Cal's gonna tweet something about it, I guess. Still a good program, though.
615-737-1025. This is the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Coming up next, we'll get to Corey Curtis from News 2, get his thoughts on the Titans as they head into Bucks week here. With the Tom Brady-less Buccaneers coming in this week for joint practices. That's next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.